professional social work. Social work has the power to change people's lives for the better. This podcast aims to help you learn, think, and act with integrity so that people who need social work get help that will transform their lives. I'm Jo.
And I'm Jerry. So welcome to this podcast, which is 1B of Series 2. And this is a reflective conversation that we're going to have. So each month we'll be posting a podcast which is about a topic. So the one that we've just done is about leadership and change. And this one is a conversation about something that's caught our interest or that someone else has raised as something for us to talk about. And you can listen to our first podcast from Series 2 and also the podcasts that we've uploaded from Series 1 on www.helpfulsocialwork.com or on iTunes. And please do tell us what you think by leaving a review or commenting on our website.
Okay, so today we plan to talk about training. Why training? Well, it actually came out of a conversation that I was having when I was opening what I like to think of as a learning opportunity or an event. And someone stuck up their hand and they said to me, so is the idea behind all this training that if we get fixed, nothing else will be broken?
Yeah, you see, that's really interesting, isn't it? Because it's that idea of training being about the person and that you just have to kind of somehow put skills and knowledge into them and then everything will be fine, which is not social work, is it really? Because social work is the person in context always.
Yes. But I think that for me, I have been coming more and more up against people kind of presenting this to me, this idea that training is because there's something wrong with them, rather than the opportunity to learn about something that we do, about social work, which is an incredibly complex and difficult piece of work where there's many changing things happening all the time, when all the people are different, when children are developing in all sorts of ways and knowledge is developing. And it seems to me that we need to have as many opportunities as we can to think and be thoughtful. So I think training is exciting. It just seems that people are experiencing it as something that is done to them, and also something that might have a almost like a negative consequence, like you've had the training, so now you have to be able to do everything well.
So this kind of fits with something we've talked about in a previous podcast around levels of analysis, you know, that if there's a problem, then you present people with a course that says, don't do that, do this instead. And then it will never go wrong again. Mm-hmm. And that just doesn't really fit with the complexity that we work in. And that's why I think we've moved away from competencies to capabilities, because a competency implies that if you learn how to do something, then you'll always be able to do it. Whereas in fact, you'll come across different situations all the time. And what you really need is a kind of toolbox of skills and knowledge and values that you can draw on. So you're a capable person who can apply that to new things all the time, rather than somebody who's competent in a particular task.
Yeah, it's very interesting how we think about our profession altogether, actually, because another argument that we get quite often, which you've just reminded me of, is that idea, well, none of these methods that you're teaching me feel natural to me, and I just like to work naturally, so I just do what feels comfortable and I'm always really honest, and that's all that people need. And that's, for me, is kind of highlighting the fact that we need to have relational skills, which we do without doubt, and highlighting the fact that we actually need to have a value base. That's the kind of things that that's talking about, and both of those are absolutely critical. But it makes it sound as if we just do those things accidentally. Whereas for me, everything you do in your profession, including using your relationship, is done deliberately. And so because it's done deliberately, that means that it's a skill, and all skills need to be refreshed, practiced, have new things added to them.
You've made me think of a conversation I had with my uncle-in-law, who's an artist, who was talking about Sorry, the cat has just walked in front of the microphone. He was talking about painting, and he said you can have a really great idea of what you want to create, but the only way to make it possible to create it is to have practiced and practiced and practiced, so you've got all the skills, all the techniques laid down, and then you can apply them to the realization of this idea. And I thought that was quite similar actually in some ways to social work, that you lay down all these techniques so that when you go to meet somebody and you have a new idea about where you want to get to, because it's a different person in a different situation, so it will always be new, then you can apply the techniques to realizing that vision of what their life might be like. And it wouldn't be enough at all to just have the techniques and then apply them in the way that you always do, or to meet with somebody and have a really wonderful relationship that means that you can actually understand what might be helpful to them, but then not be able to create it because you don't have the techniques. So you really need both.
I think that's exactly right. And that's and so for me, training is not training. Incidentally, ever since you told me that the word train comes from the root word to drag or to pull, it just made so much sense to me, Jerry, because I was just like going, that's what I'm doing sometimes. And that's wrong. You know, like we know fundamentally that is not the way we should treat anybody, actually, certainly not each other. And I would really hate to think that anyone who is in the field of education or knowledge or support for social workers running any kind of pods or clinics or any of those things would see their role as a dragging role. Because to me, that lifelong love of learning it's such a privilege, really, to be able to do that. And we've got to find a way for you know, to make sure that we don't ever link that with wrongness or badness or the fault residing in a person or an individual.
And we do seem to be much better at identifying deficits in knowledge and skills. And values when we talk about them, but we don't talk about them enough, I don't think, than we are at identifying achievements and strengths. And certainly in adults services, the emphasis is all about strength-based practice, but the training or the learning and development doesn't necessarily follow that approach. And I think it's quite difficult actually to focus learning and development on building on strengths and get away from the idea that it's a deficit that you have to fill somehow. I think you use the idea of people aren't empty vessels that you just pour stuff into, that they're growing creatures with you. Yeah, we've all got development all the time, and it's about looking at what's flourishing and helping it to flourish more, but also expanding the areas that we flourish in.
I think that's right. And for me as well, there's a whole idea of how we identify good enough or great even. I was talking with a group the other day and they'd had a serious case review, and I using the appreciative inquiry method, and I love appreciative inquiry. I think it's a really great way of learning. And I said, well, what we need to do is have some seriously good case reviews. That's what we need to have. We need to start looking at seriously good cases that had excellent outcomes for children, young people, adults and families that they were pleased with. And we actually need to go and break them apart and learn from them in the same way so we can identify, well, right here, there was a turning point, and at this point, things could have actually been very difficult, but they weren't because your skills were used deliberately in these ways, so that we can start to identify for people when they're using their skills deliberately successfully, which I think would be quite helpful, and I'm sure that it's done in lots of places.
Yeah, and I think the slightly artificial but really conscious thing that we do of always trying to say learning and development instead of training, and learning opportunities instead of a training course, is really important actually, because the sort of model of, you know, if you want to develop or you're not sure about how to do things, that you identify a problem in your practice or the practice in your organisation, you put on a training course and people go and they get trained, and then all of a sudden it's okay, really ignores the ideal intrinsic motivation of training, which is that you go because you want to be a great practitioner and you want to develop your skills and you want to share your knowledge with others. So you can have learning opportunities on your own, and they're absolutely great, and but you often also get more out of joining with others because of the reflective space that it creates and the exchange that you have of knowledge. So ideally people would be able to seek out learning opportunities that really motivated them and really tapped into the things that they want to excel at, rather than feeling like they have to go because there's a problem somehow.
Yeah. And I think for me, I always know when things are going well when I'm working with a group of my peers. And that's the other thing. I mean, I'm very lucky, and I think you are too, Jerry, in that we work with adults who are competent professionals who are dedicating their time to learning and thinking about a field which matters to us. Mm-hmm. So what that means for me is that I'm often very energized. Mm-hmm. And challenged, and often, you know, I kind of walk away with a bit of a spring in my step, because I've had really, really interesting and thoughtful conversations with people who genuinely want to think their way through the conundrums that face them day to day. And it's right that we need to step out of the workplace to have those opportunities. And that's why I think they're learning opportunities, because you step out of that really fast-paced, very rapid, high-demand environment, and you get somewhere where you can think about what it is that you're trying to do to be effective and make a difference.
Yeah, and that's the difference between reflection in action and reflection on action, isn't it? That, you know, people who love their work are constantly thinking about it and refining it and honing it as they go along. However, if you get the chance to stop and review it and really consciously turn experience into learning and knowledge that you can apply in the future, then that has massive benefits. And it also means that you can share it with others. So you're never so knowledgeable, so skillful, that it's not worth engaging in learning because of what you can reinforce yourself, but also what you can share with others.
And I think that this is really, I mean, we know that if you are told something, you take in some of it. If you're told something and you write it down, you take in a little bit more. If you're told something, you write it down and you practice it, rehearse it, then you'll have more knowledge in it. But if you're told something, you write it down, you practice it and rehearse it, and then you speak about it, teach it, or offer it to someone else, you actually end up with much deeper knowledge again. So I think that one of the things is that we need to be prepared to keep exploring what it is we know and why. There's never a time when other people's input, if it's done in that very curious and person-centered kind of value-based way, doesn't help people grow. It's when learning is seen as a stick. Or when it's seen as a deficit model, then I think it's very hard to get great things from it. But if you feel safe, then you can go to all sorts of places, can't you?
Yeah, and that fits with your idea of disruption that you talk about, that one of the things that you want is to be disrupted from your normal paths and your normal patterns and your normal habits and learning opportunities, particularly when you meet with ideas, people, situations that you've not come across before, throw you off course slightly and give you a different perspective on things and really help you not to become a habit-driven practitioner. And the same with training sessions or learning opportunities that I might deliver, where actually somebody asks me a question or responds in a way that I just wouldn't expect. I think it's going to go a particular direction and then it doesn't. And they can be really tiring, but the most exhilarating as well. You know, if you come away feeling like that didn't go how you expected, that's probably really good.
When you're talking to somebody, you're having a conversation, aren't you? And just because you have a kind of agenda of knowledge that we have to explore together, that doesn't make it less fluid or less responsive. So you're still responding. You still have that fluidity. You still have that conversation. It's just that you know that in a day we have to have talked about these certain things.
Yeah, and hopefully an unpredictable, diverse, kind of thought-provoking session like that would mirror actually the practice that you'd have when you go out to work with people in the field. You know, that you would, yeah, it's not predictable. It's not, it doesn't follow a set course. And so you do need the opportunity to try that out with your peers in a safe environment. And the first time that you talk about, you talk to somebody about a theory or a practice, or the first time that you use a tool, it shouldn't really be with a service user. You should have had the chance to rehearse and get those techniques ready before you go and try and apply it in a real life situation. And actually, that means we've somehow managed to talk about two of the big areas of what makes training successful. You know, we spend a lot of time thinking about training transfer, and there's four areas that you have to think about. So one is individual motivation, which we kind of touched on really, that it should be ideally a pull and not a kind of drag to come to the training. The design of it, so that it is actually a place where there's reflection and there's a real discussion and opportunity to practice things, but also the opportunity to plan how you're going to use what you've learned in practice. But then the other two big things are around the support that you have when you get back into your workplace and into your normal day-to-day life, and the fit between what you're learning and the culture that you go back into. And that's where I think things can really fall apart if the motivation and the purpose behind the training is more of a negative one, because it does leave people thinking that there won't be the support and there won't be the culture that's needed for them to really thrive.
And you've got to be so careful, haven't you? That's one of the responsibilities we have. You know, if we talk about the value base and the ethics of social work teachers or trainers, I really do not like that word. But you know, if you think about that, we have a responsibility to ensure that we are nice and clear about how we understand the environment that people are going into, and how we communicate what we can and can't offer, and how we explore support. And by that I mean that, you know, we should be really careful about how we accept commissions, about the types of conversations we have with the people who are commissioning. I know that for both of us, you know, we try to go in and shadow in organisations prior to teaching there, so that we can understand what the organisation looks like. There's all sorts of things that you can do, actually, if you're trying to make a learning opportunity excellent before you even accept a commission, that really matter.
Yeah, and certainly for people who are learning, or any of us when we're learning, it is really important to think about what's going to help us to use that, because our own motivation and the importance of the learning won't in themselves be enough. They'll need to be people around us to keep us on track, to help us overcome any barriers, and to enable us to use it. And often that's colleagues, peer support, and ideally it's also like line management, supervision, you know, people who've got that sort of mentoring and supporting role. And then, yes, if the climate isn't right, you know, if we're trying to use a hoist in a place where, you know, there are never two people free to use it, then it won't work. We have to kind of think about actually how far can we get with applying the learning in the culture that we're in.
And I think this is such a tricky point, Jerry, because I think that as much as possible, we should always talk about what makes excellent social work. I think that we should always be striving to do the very best we can to turn our good intentions into deliverables for children, families, and adults. And that can be quite difficult given some of the context that people are in, particularly if there's restructures, if there's a real lack of resources, as you say, if the training requires X and they only have Y, all these types of things. But I get challenged on this quite a bit, and I think it's a fair challenge. But one of the things for me is this: if we don't want excellence. Like we, as in the social workers, mm-hmm. as in the people who are actually doing the job, if we don't have a drive and a need to keep challenging the environments and the contexts, and if we don't want, if we don't know what great looks like in our own heads and continue to want to be great, who will? I'm just not sure that anyone else will have as much skin in the game as we do.
Yeah, I think it is really important to aspire, isn't it? And because unless you're quite clear about what you'd like it to be, then you won't know where you're going. What would you be learning for?
Yeah, it goes back to that kind of leadership and vision, doesn't it? When we say everyone can be a leader and you all have to have a vision, you do have to have a vision of what your best looks like.
Yeah, and I think the role of educators in the broadest sense is very, very important. It's great that in the professional capabilities framework, there's a pathway for educators as there is for practitioners, and you're becoming more and more skilled, and a pathway for managers, because in my experience, the people who've modelled excellence to me or mentored me or supported me to apply learning that I've had or encouraged me to go and find things out and try them out in a safe place have been absolutely crucial to ever being able to do any good work with people. So you need all three, don't you? You need the excellent practitioners, you need the excellent overseers and managers, and you need the excellent educators to yes. help them. And I think if we could, one of the conclusions that I'm coming to from this podcast is that we do need to stop saying training and talk about learning and development.
Yes.
And also hang on to aspiration and hang on to the kind of ethical responsibility that we've got to develop, but always think about development. Oops, bashed my microphone. Always think about development alongside support. So if you're going to be setting expectations and aspirations, then you need support. I think there's quite a neat sort of equation that I keep getting drawn back to, which is whenever we talk about expectations, we have to talk at least as much about support.
Yes, I think that's absolutely entirely reasonable. And support is not just saying, oh, we're releasing you, or we're giving you time, or we really value this. It's actually about making space in the workplace for the new skills to be practiced in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's just looking at the systems around it. If you're teaching people to use a certain method or to a certain approach, and yet all of the forms and records and panels and requirements don't actually fit with that, then you're not going to get any traction in that environment at all. So there has to be some kind of awareness of all of those systems and how they're going to fit with this learning opportunity. And a real conscious letting go of something. One of the things that I often say to people is, please don't try and do this as well as everything else you're doing. You need to do things differently.
Yeah.
Not more things, different things.
Some of the practical things that we've noticed people have done that have worked well are having a conversation with your supervisor, line manager, before you go on the course about what it is you want to do differently, doing a plan that involves them and ideally kind of colleagues, so a realistic plan of how you're going to use learning, but who's going to support you with that, and then having it on the supervision agenda, having it on the team meeting agenda. And yeah, the practicalities around things like you've said around if you're using a new tool, make sure it's available on the IT system, make sure it's available in the room, make sure you have the chance to practice it, and then check in with people regularly about, is the climate right for this? How are we doing with using it? What's stopping us? Because barriers and enablers kind of come up from those conversations, don't they? And you can address them then. Whereas if you think the training's done, it's done, we're fixed.
Yeah.
That won't work.
It's a start, isn't it? The learning is the start.
Mm.
It's once it actually filters through to the people we serve and work with and is helpful to them, that's the best bit of it.
Yeah.
That's the bit that really matters.
And it is really great when you see an organisation following up with people and then identifying where they're using things well and then talking about it. Sharing the examples.
Yeah, the seriously good case reviews.
I was just thinking, in terms of reflective questions, I think probably the two that go together would be, what are you motivated to learn? You know, how, you know, what do you want, what motivates you in terms of your learning and development? But then alongside that, what's going to help you keep that motivation alive? What support do you need to keep motivated? So it's not going to be enough for you to want to learn and to go and do that. You need to have the support around you.
And I keep thinking, Jerry, that our work is legacy work. For me, what we do leaves a legacy. It leaves a legacy with our organisation. It leaves a legacy with the children, the young people, the families, the adults we work with, that lasts long after our careers have ended. And so part of learning is about continuing to strive to get the knowledge and skills to leave the legacy you want to. You know, what kind of legacy do you want to leave in this field? And how do you get the help and the support and the challenge you need to actually do that and do it well?
That's great. Okay, so do let us know what you think of the podcast by commenting at helpfulsocialwork.com or on iTunes, and we look forward to hearing from you. I'll speak to you again soon.
Okay, thank you, Jerry. It's always lovely to speak to you.